101 FM, TKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. Check, 1, 2, 1, 2. Well, here on June 2nd, hopefully you folks can hear me out there okay. It is a Wednesday, it is hump day, and my apologies for technical difficulties, but we will play through the pain. You again are listening to CKLN Rude Awakening. I usually shout out the call signs. I was just giving a reminder that we have to play them as well, so I'll start doing that soon. And you folks will hear the friendly folks at CKLN. Here at CKLN, letting you know who we are and what our obligations are to the community as part of a community radio station and as part of our condition of using the public airwaves. Now, there's a number of bureaucratic things we got to do. There's also a good deal of social responsibility, especially these days when we all like being social, but not many of us like being responsible, and that, of course, includes yours truly here. You are listening to your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. Here are Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, here from 6 to 7 a.m. My colleague, JD, hosts on Fridays from 6 to 7 a.m. And here on the shows, I do try and break down the New World Order, the system of globalization that we see around us, especially with the upcoming G20 summit. I just made the point on yesterday's show that I don't think the protest is necessarily a good idea. It's not necessarily the thing to do. If you really care about these issues, you want to stand for something, stand for it before the big football game, before the big rock concert. You know, get the word out there now. And certain members of the media are doing a great job in exposing the things we need to know about the G20 summit, the ridiculous waste of money, the overbearing security, the inconvenience to Canadians, the random violations of our rights, as my colleague Dan Dixon, PressForTruth.ca, mentioned yesterday, where because of the increasing, potential threats around the G20, our governments can increasingly threaten to curtail our rights and freedoms, which is ridiculous. You got more threats than do more surveillance, do more intel, tell the guys who are working on this stuff to look for the darn terrorists. You know, it's been 9 years since 9/11, which was an inside job, and that's why we haven't seen many terrorists in this part of the world since, because people know that violence is a horrible way to achieve the goals of any political struggle. It ticks off the people you're fighting with. It ticks off the people, by and large, you're trying to appeal to. It ticks off the people you're trying to help. It doesn't work. I mean, you can do something violent, but it probably won't achieve the political ends. And so that's why we have to understand that governments out there for years have staged false flag terror attacks. They've staged attacks. They've blamed them on someone else. And then at that point, they've convinced their public to accept more security, more control, and the need to go to war with a bunch of strangers who really, individually, they just don't have any problems with. So that's, that's how it goes. I mean, American tourists right now could be visiting Persia, 5,000-year-old culture, cradle of civilization, some of the most beautiful architecture, math, science, some of the friendliest people, and very westernized. Iran is a very westernized nation. Tried to westernize in the 50s, and the CIA and British intelligence and British Petroleum wouldn't have that. 1954, I believe, when Mohammad Mossadegh, the Western-educated and pro-Western leader, said, we'd like to nationalize the oil fields. You guys, you Brits and British Petroleum, you guys own our oil fields, and we still, you guys can still have most of the money, but we'd like to at least take a little bit. And that was the first CIA and MI6 sponsored coup. The first CIA coup, they actually bragged about it at CIA.gov on their website. And what they did was they went through Iran and they basically formed a group that said they were pro Mossadegh and that they were pro, the current prime minister. And then they had that group kill a bunch of innocent people. Just walk around going, yeah, Mossadegh's the man. And just, spray up a grocery store or whatever. And so the people got really ticked off and thought, geez, this guy's acting like a crazy lunatic dictator. And then the CIA, working under the auspices of MI6 and at the behest of British Petroleum, had a coup government ready, a guy to come in as a savior saying, wait, the guy you liked who's done really cool stuff went nuts and wants to kill you all now. I'll save you. And again, that was 1954-ish or so. So, and the people of America right now could be visiting Iran as tourists and seeing, how they do Western culture the way they do while maintaining their Persian roots as best they can. And, of course, we all wrestle with identity politics today. But instead, because of the demonization, because of the false flaggery that's been conducted by the Anglo-American establishment, the New World Order, the people who primarily operate, out of the Western world and who are in charge of our countries, because of that, of course, people are disinclined to view different parts of the entire world as being worth seeing, worth visiting, and so on. And only, I think, 12% or something, 12-15% of Americans have passports. So one of the wealthiest countries in the world doesn't care to see the rest of it, or at least many of the people there don't. So just an idea of what's going on here and how in the broader sense, the New World Order does try and confuse us, dehumanize us, and so on. I still can't hear myself in my headphones right now, so I think I'm straining a little bit too much, and I'm not being as relaxed as I can right now on the microphone. I'm going to try and take care of that, but to help me take care of that, I'm going to rely on Mr. Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. He had a show on May 26, 2010. It says here, it's at number 585, The Purpose of Crisis, No Thought Feeds While Herd Stampedes. And, it's the idea of getting us all, to push for certain things because of a crisis, because of a perceived threat, because we think it'll keep us safe, is something that they're behind. And again, that is principle behind false flag attacks. And here in Toronto, I've been putting out the word for some time now to justify $1 billion worth of security. It might take, a bit more you know, some magic marker on some bank machines. They may need to blow something up real good in this city, and it'll work, and it'll work. My sources on the streets tell me that, you know, the false flag events provocateur by the New World Order tend to have an effect on people who just want to chill out. So if you just want to chill out, and you sure as hell don't want to think about how evil the government is, that's fair enough. It makes sense, but they are, we got to deal with it. And so when it came to things like the underwear bomber, which in last December or so, or actually maybe in March, where a Somali man was basically escorted onto a plane by a large Indian man who was well-dressed, wealthy-looking. On the plane itself, the whole scene was recorded by a third party to those two. The guy got on the plane with no passport, no airplane ticket, was just, you know, escorted on the plane through some sort of State Department, you know, secret handshake. And then he's accused of, oh my God, he hit a bomb in his underwear. When the experts say technically that's not possible, a lawyer and a second and third witness have come forward to say, no, that dude wasn't alone. He was with another dude who was never brought up in mainstream news stories about it, and so on and so forth. But people who want to chill out don't want to look into those details. And people who chill out, you know, sure as heck don't want to take on the responsibility of, you know, thinking, wait a minute, I think the government really is evil, and I think we really got to do something about it, so, you know, what's next? And as a result of that, you know, in my intel, my sources on the streets, you know, as I be, you know, getting the feedback and dry snitching on the word here on Dry Snitching on the World, here on CKLN Rude Awakening, tell me that people love that answer. You know, it's like when you know, and buddy's asking, would you guys take the naked body scanners? Oh, yeah, what do I care? You know? But do you think that people should be taking naked pictures of you? You know, and you know, who knows if they can keep those? And who knows if they're laughing at you? And you know, what if you don't want to be seen naked by people? Like, you know, what about all that? And they're like, well, it's better than that than you know, having your plane blown up. And that's how simple it works, folks. And in a world where we look for simple answers, the New World Order that runs the world are definitely going to keep foisting them on us. And we'll know what to say. We'll know exactly what to say to justify the latest round of BS, because we'll be given some BS to justify it. And so that, in a nutshell, is false flaggery, potential stuff blowing up in Toronto, why we are having trouble, you know, exposing things like this. So we have to learn to deal with this information. We have to learn to have conversations about it without feeling personally threatened about where our mood is going, without feeling personally threatened, or without thinking that we're going to threaten someone else's mood. Because this is not about you or me, or you and whomever you're speaking about these issues with. This is about the world. It's an abstract concept. You know, we don't have to feel threatened by discussing heavy issues. And in fact, we can probably feel empowered if we, in fact, do have the ability to discuss these issues. But, you know, I do have a copy of the Metro today, and it's wrapped in a big, glossy, pink Febreze Thai dragon fruit. Scratch and sniff. Let me just sniff this here. Ooh. Well, now I wouldn't mind my clothes smelling like dragon fruit, so, hey, we you know, we have important priorities. But again, this is money, folks. Money. Money drives our interests. Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com is going to break down a bit about what money is for his show, and how it's pretty inconsistent with everything that we've been taught about it so far, at least on its face.
I want you to focus the further the politicians and anybody else does. So that was all a plank of their integration, because they always lied to you when they're pulling off big stunts, and they lie at every phase of it, you see. And at the moment, the whole world's in it, supposed to be into this chaos. And whatever happens over that side of the planet, like the butterfly effect, when it affects us over here as well. And if they go down, we go down, and all this kind of stuff, you see. But it's all based on a racket, of course, which is called money. And I think there's been very few topics that's had so many different books put out about it, and it's called money. The whole con game that runs the world. And money and debt. I mean, every country with its central banking system, it's based upon fraud, really, because they don't have anything to back up their cash with, really, especially those that still say they've got a fractional reserve there, meaning a fraction of what they should have if they have to put out the real gold or whatever it is they're supposed to be backed with to replace the money. It can't be done. So it's all a con game, and it's based upon loaning money out. Banks make their money off loaning money out. And I used to be surprised at the socialists, you see, when I was really interested in finding out, well, what did they think and all the rest of it? And you went to socialism, and of course they believed, like the Fabian Society, and you've got to look into the writings of the Fabians. You must do that if you want to understand the real socialist agenda. And they were all financed by big bankers. And you'd think that would be detrimental to them. That's the way it's been presented to the public. Oh, socialism is really communism and it's detrimental to the capitalism, but it's nothing of the kind. So true socialism, you see, still keeps the banking system, the big bites there, the big boys that own the banks. And they love it because socialists love to borrow money for programs, which keeps debt going, and the banks love that kind of stuff. They love debt. They live off debt. That's what their interest means. They've got interest in it, you see. And they've got to get the whole population of a country, now whole countries, involved in paying off not only national debts now, but international debts, you see, for other people too, because we're all in it together. That's the whole mantra of war. We're all in it together, you see. So that guarantees that further generations are born into a debt system and having to pay back loans from previous generations that existed before them. And when you go into the history of money, it truly is fascinating to understand that even the Phoenicians in ancient times were financing wars between countries, taking the countries over through debt, and then using those countries for further wars by massive unemployment and so on, and recruiting the youngsters and getting them to go off and fight other countries that hadn't succumbed to their money systems. And they wanted a standardized weight for silver, weight measures for silver. That's what they were doing, standardizing across the whole planet. And they also had an amazing system, very similar to what we see today, because when they went around the coastal areas, eventually they conquered those areas through debt, and they used little factory towns. People worked as slaves to produce all the wares that they then took across into other countries for trade and so on. It's a horror story, really. And we find they even had gold mines as far into Russia, even into to the Ural Mountains. The Phoenicians owned them. And what they did was always make bargains with different warlords when they wanted to go off and fight. Yeah, we'll loan you the money for your ships and all the rest of it. Or you can rent ours, because they had fleets to rent as well. And they always demanded on part payment for their loans so many of the captured soldiers, the defeated enemy, and they used them for slaves. And they worked out that they went through, I think it was a person would get maybe 1 ounce of gold before they died in the mines. That was how fast they lasted in the mines. Incredible. And this con has gone on forever. It's just a con after con after con. And now it's all IOUs, which we call money today. Everything's based on IOUs. And the guy that owns most of the IOUs can collect interest on IOUs. It's just fantastic and bizarre. And we go along with this because we're trained to. And we have specialists always coming on who are economists and so on, and they tell us how it all works. And of course no one understands them because it's based on baloney. Really, it truly is baloney. But getting back to reality again, you know, Keynes, John Maynard Keynes, was the big professor who they brought in to bring in this cashless, this non-gold or silver-backed type system. And you just print money out and sell off the debts, and those who would hold the bonds for that would therefore collect and so on, so on, so on, and then trade it amongst themselves. And he wanted international socialism. He said, this is Bretton Woods. Bretton Woods is what we've lived on up till now with agreements and international trade and all the rest of it. He said that this is only part one. Part two would come maybe in 50 years, which is about now, you see. And it would see the whole implementation of a global structure of socialist control. Socialists are about control through governments, from birth to death, in a scientifically managed society. That's what it really is. And as I say, the big bankers love socialism because they go to the banks with a strange Keynesian idea they can borrow money and spend your way out of depression or recession. And it's a complete farce. There's an article here, it's from the American Thinker, it was March 17th, 2010. It goes on about the Keynesian fraud. And it says, Keynesian economics is mostly a fraud and always has been. It's got little theoretical basis and no empirical support. In other words, provable support. As I previously explained, he says, he's got a link to it. He says, our school system has convinced the public that government is the source of most good and can solve all problems. And that's true, isn't it? That's what most folk, the government should do something about that. Whatever it is, you know, the government should do something. Generations of children have been taught that Franklin Delano Roosevelt saved us from the Great Depression. History textbooks proclaim this, yet Roosevelt's Treasury Secretary clearly contradicted this myth. This is what his secretary said at the time, and that was Henry Morgenthau, who was the Treasury Secretary in May 1939. He says, we've tried spending money. This is right before the beginning of World War II. That's what got them out of it. Nothing that Roosevelt did. He says, we've tried spending money. We're spending more than we ever spent before, and it does not work. And I have just one interest, and if I am wrong, somebody else can have my job. I want to see this country prosperous. I want to see people get a job. I want to see people get enough to eat. We have never made good on our promises. I say after 8 years of this administration, we have just as much unemployment as when we started, and an enormous debt to boot. So you've got a massive debt on top of it with all these make-work projects and so on. And who was Roosevelt anyway? Who put him in? Wall Street put him in. The great socialist, you know. Wall Street bankers put him in. But the myth continues. World War II was what got the countries in the West out of the Depression. War. It's amazing, too. I never fathomed it. How can you be completely broke and you can suddenly find money to go off to war? The bankers are just so happy to throw money at you then as you go off to war. It's because the bankers also have control over the big corporations that are going to make a massive profit in killing off a war. War is great. Every shell that goes off, every bomb that explodes has to get replaced. Big, big bucks for war, you know. And that's what got everybody out of the Great Depression. It didn't last a few years and just disappear. It went right into the start of World War II. It says, Morgenthau's statement is the equivalent of Ben Bernanke and Tim Geithner stating that everything we have done has done no good. When the architect and manager of the program admits it failed, on what basis can honest historians claim that it was successful? If only current political appointees could be as honest as Morgenthau. But the Keynesian myth is too important and must survive at all costs. And that's true, to keep the socialism going. What they con the public is, well, you see, we take all this cash, but look at all the services we provide in return. Most of the cash they spend is corporate welfare for international corporations, not on the public. It says here, it's the source of many economists' income and prestige. Keynesian economics is the bedrock supporting the entire myth of expansive government. It's true. Socialism expands government. Britain went into World War II, supposedly as a free country, and came out of it after the government had taken over every department, agriculture, everything, massively expanded. It came out they were fighting national socialism, supposedly. They came out as a completely socialist country. Yeah. In Keynesian Economics and the Wizard of Oz, Dan Mitchell does an excellent job of exposing what more and more observers believe to be a fraud. Mitchell states, and the ultimate triumph of theory over reality, the Keynesians say all that matters is the macroeconomic model behind the curtain, showing that more government spending leads to more jobs and growth. But then we'll see how they actually get these models done. I'll be back with more after this break. John Watts, and we're cutting through the matrix, reading an article about the Keynesians and their policies and so on, and it's all bogus. But that's what we've been living on all this time. It's not meant to be understood by ordinary people, because it's, if you try to understand it, it's illogical, and of course you're not supposed to get to that stage. You give up before you get to that stage, you realize it's illogical. And that's how cons work, of course. But it says, in the ultimate triumph of theory, and this is very important, this, the triumph of theory over reality. The Keynesians say all that matters is the macroeconomic model behind the curtain showing that more government spending leads to more jobs and growth. Consider the recent report from the Congressional Budget Office, which claimed that Obama's stimulus created at least 1 million jobs. Every country does this. You know, every country uses the same nonsense. Yeah, this latest thing created a million jobs. As Brian Riedel of the Heritage Foundation noted, CBO's calculations are not based on actually observing the economy's recent performance. Rather, they used an economic model that was programmed to assume that stimulus spending automatically creates jobs. It's one of these computer models, you see, thus guaranteeing the results. The problem here is obvious. Once CBO decided to assume that every dollar of government spending increases the GDP, its conclusion that the stimulus saved jobs was preordained. It's just like the climate model the computers use. The theory triumphs over fact, you see. He says, but surely this can't be true. You may be thinking, our public servants in Washington would not make important policy decisions based on a model that automatically produces a certain result, would they? Peter Suderman of Reason pulls aside the curtain. He says, those reports rely on assumption-packed models that effectively predetermine their outcomes. What they say, in essence, is that the stimulus worked because we assume it did. And that's it. That's good enough, you know. Hypothesis in the physical sciences could be more reasonably tested when you're testing and dissecting things and so on. It says here data have validity because experiments are repeatable. Yet even in the purest of sciences, political influence can corrupt. The modification of data to support the global warming scam is recent evidence of that. And by the way, I'll put a link up to show you that in action, because Lord Monckton won the debate in the Oxford Debating Society, the Union, on global warming farce. He won the debates. That's one of the top debating societies on the planet. And again, all the stuff that they're using, and all these different guys who are cashing in on it, all these agencies that are making their money off global warming scam, use the models. They support all the models and all the theories, but not the facts.
That's why I say the protest you gon' do before this. That's why I say the protest you gon' do before this. Long sun stay shining, I stay grinding, rain check still smiling. Gather round for class before you gather round for your mask. While they masking truth, I'm asking you, ain't there something you can do to tell the truth to someone new or even someone old? Don't matter, you heard it, now the story needs told. Can't wait till they burn it. We in a Orwell universe, when they sell in hell, and we rehearse. So do what you wanna, see them showing up, know you're just doing what they want, son. That's why I say, the protest, you gon' do before this. That's why I say, the protest, you gon' do before this. Long as sun stays shining, I stay grinding, rain check still smiling. Been the same since the 60s, got us this far, where the hell is we? And where we going next? 20 countries run the world, that got me vexed. So I say screw a text, make them bleed with the screen so the people feel blessed. Can't chill, feeling stressed, I'm young and I'm best. Post no bills, I say hell yes. So what you stand for, if you really stand for it, stand for it before. On the streets there's a war for the minds of the poor who late for the war. Worldwide rebellion, can't you see? For some rock concert yelling, fans blowing off steam, ain't spelling no way out, that's why I'm yelling. That's why I say the protest you gon' do before this. That's why I say the protest you gon' do before this. That's why I say the protest you gon' do before this. long as sun stay shining, I stay grinding, rain check still smiling.
And we're back, CKLN listeners. Again, that was a clip from Alan Watt, the radio show Cutting Through the Matrix on Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN. And, yeah, just talking about money and how they project the models they use to define the success of the various programs they announce. And yet we've seen the same basic institutions and people talk the same smack for the last 50 years. And we've also seen, you know, the same response. It's been normalized for the last 50 years. And so that's why I launched in with, I think, the final mix, pretty much, of the song F of Protest. No swearing here. No swearing allowed no more, so that's okay. I do have a little history of some shows with some cursing. Used some cursive, but no longer. We are going to comply as best we can with CRTC regulations and... we treat them well, they treat us well, and then hey, we'll do the best we can here at CKLN Radio, community radio station for communities in Toronto. But Mr. Watt talked about it, and you love money, I love money, we all love money, and we should in this system. It's perfectly normal too. Should we? You know, people say you shouldn't. You know, the root, you know, Christianity, Jesus said, the love of money is the root of all evil, and so on and so forth. But this is just how he's raised. We were raised in this system. And I know personally, I've experimented with, you know, I was making solid, you know, lawyerish money, doing telecom sales a while ago, and traveling and so on. And I've also experimented with being fairly broke, trying to live on just a couple of bucks a day. And here's what I've learned about money. The less you have, the less it can dominate your thoughts. Because you're not, you know, you can't buy anything. There's only so much you can do. I talked to a couple of people. My roommate's also been broke at times, and both of us doing okay right now. Well, you know, we've gone up and down in this system over the last few years, sometimes by choice, sometimes not. And he said the same thing. He said, yeah, the only thing I had to do was worry about, you know, what to eat. And once that was out of the way, that was it. I had the rest of the day free to do whatever I want. I could read a book. I could do this. I could do that. I could go. I could walk anywhere. You know, I wasn't trapped in a schedule that money provided me. Again, I'm not recommending any of these things. I'm thinking that alternate points of view are healthy to explore, continue to understand yours and the one that you've chosen, and to improve on it if possible. So it totally makes sense. But I also know so that's money there, and I have to admit I've been in the same boat. When I've been trying to get really creative, and then my creativity or whatever I can come up with, or whatever I think that I have of some value to share with others and or the world, that's where I get a lot more of my strength from. And when it comes to money and other sort of mass market solutions for ego boosting, you know what ends up happening is. People often try and compete without figuring out how they're unique. And then, you know, you're always second. If you're a rapper bragging about money, you're just not going to get as much as Jay-Z or 50 Cent, and so you're always going to lose. And if you're a female bragging about your looks, you're always going to lose because that's totally subjective. And, you know, someone could choose someone else over you if that's your validation. However, if you do provide something that's unique and that's original and that's your own, then no one can take that from you. No one else can produce it, and it's a more permanent and organic and holistic form of validation. The other thing about money, though, is that in this system, here in a world run by the New World Order, money buys us freedom. And I know that, like others, I've never been more stressed than when I've had no money, and when rent's been coming up. Or I had some other expenses to take care of, and when I had no money, I was bugging, and it's understandable, and that overall feeling is what can be a drain on my energy and my happiness, and I assume someone else's. There's also the concept of hood rich, and hood rich is the concept of acting like you have money even though you don't have money, and just flexing once in a while. And there's people out there that, you know, they got their condo bills, they got their car bills, they got their this, they got their that, and so they're pretty, you know, pretty thrifty during the week and don't spend much, and then on the weekend they'll drop a couple $100 on booze at you know, at the local nightclub or bar or whatever, and that's how they act hood rich. It's like, well, most of the week, you know, I pack a tuna fish sandwich for work and decline invitations to spend money, but on the weekend I act like Puff Daddy, and that's a large part of our culture. And I know I've done the same, where I've been like, I'm broke, this sucks, I'm broke, this sucks, screw it, you know, give me that $6 burger, because it was a lot when I wasn't spending, you know, that much, you know, per day. But these are the stories of my experiments in freedom. And from stories of experiments in freedom, perhaps we can help engineer more of our own. So thanks again to Mr. Alan Watt again, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, for that. But I do have a whole bunch of crazy stuff in front of me. First thing, though, I'd like to start off with is the Metro. Just to analyze what this is, if you get today's Metro, it is 6:45 in the morning here on Wednesday, the 2nd of June, 2010. And if you get a Metro this morning, you'll notice it's covered in a big plastic Febreze ad. About three-quarters of the front page is covered. It says Febreze, Thai, Dragon Fruit, and Scratch and Sniff. And once again, I will get my little Scratch and Sniff Thai Dragon Fruit buzz going here live on the air. Like Johnny Fever on WKRP drinking whiskey on the air. Just getting a little Scratch and Sniff buzz. And on the back it says, bring home an exotic new scent, fresh from Febreze. And they are really pushing this Thai dragon fruit. Odd, considering, you know, Thailand just having crazy economic riots recently. And so they choose to launch this campaign. Not saying they're related, but, you know, hey, it is odd. Check out brandsaver.ca. From June 2nd to October 31st, for over $16 in savings on Febreze products. $16! So you got to go to brandsaver.ca for that. Can you imagine? You know, this is again, you know, sticking with money today, because it is a huge part of how our society is being structurally re-engineered. The powers that be, evil, the leaders of our countries, at least the public ones, you know, tell us, oh, you know, we got huge debts and we got huge expenses and governments are broke, and you know, we got to say, hey, we've been giving you 30, 40. Mr. Gaskin's just coming in to blow a gasket. Next in 15 minutes, but for now, I'll go back to the story. So money. So on money. I don't know what I was going to say. All right, so the point is, back to the Metro. One more time. Almost better than a file and a cake. Message. Drake, and this is the rapper Drake from Toronto, is volunteering to bring fan messages when he visits incarcerated rapper Lil Wayne today. The 23-year-old Toronto rapper tweeted that he's planning a trip to see Lil Wayne, who is serving a one-year sentence at New York Rikers Island after pleading guilty to gun possession. Full caps. Finally, got some time for a visit. See tomorrow to go see my brother. Drake wrote to his Twitter followers yesterday, so if you got messages need to be delivered, just write at Tell Wayne. Lil Wayne has served as a mentor-like figure for Drake since he first heard the younger rapper in 2008. And I got to say about Drake, I like Drake. I'm a fan of Drake. You know, and I, you know, I think he's doing a good job. I also think that he's a very, very intelligent man, and he's very, very well politically trained and media trained. And just watching his career and his interviews and the way he conducts himself, and you'll see me too. Like there's an interview right now on my blog, go to blackchristian.blogspot.com, that I was doing for the film United We Fall. And in that interview, I spoke very much like this and let people know the New World Order is a system of large institute. And that's how I spoke. And I broke it down real, real simple, pure, hardcore, flawless, Nazi shrink speak, because a lot of people appreciate that, and because it's I'm going up against other globalists in the film that speak like that. And so when you're up against guys from the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Bilderberg Group, and so on, you may employ that tactic just so you can fit in the conversation. I saw a debate between the creators of Loose Change, two of the three, Dylan Avery and Jason Burmes. Corey Rowe wasn't there, but Dylan Avery and Jason Burmes up against the Popular Mechanics guys, the magazine guys, who were debunking Loose Change and debunking the people exposing the 9/11 myth, or at least trying to. And the kids lost their cool. At the time, they were young. They were on Democracy Now, who normally doesn't deal with the issue of 9/11 very well, and certainly ignores 9/11 truth as much as they can. But what I noticed about the interview was that that the Popular Mechanics guys simply might have won because they kept their cool, whereas the Loose Change guys had better facts, better arguments, and the Popular Mechanics guys would come back with, "See, sometimes people have to invent a way of looking at the world that fits into their own given paranoia." And they would just come back with that type of hardcore Nazi shrink speak, that calm down now, there, take your pills. And it's amazing stuff, and I know as well from having been a university debater and public speaker and someone who's always been whiskey and always been told to be Bailey's. So I've always been Scotch, I've always wanted to be Bailey's. And I still am Scotch, and I still want to be Bailey's, and I will try and bail myself out once in a while. But the way the New World Order has engineered our culture, especially in this part of the world, we get more respect for our discipline than our passion. And so you'll get some guys like Lil Wayne, like myself, who just go, "Screw this, I don't want to do that." And then you'll get guys with a real brilliant, almost sociopathic ability to say, "No, I'm cool. I know the game, and I'm playing to win, and so here it is." And so, with respect to this Drake article, the reason I bring all that up is just to bring up that point in society and to let you know how people are speaking to you, why they're speaking to you that way. And Kanye West has a great line. Like some of his stuff, don't like some of his stuff, don't co-sign anybody in the world 100%, and don't recommend anyone co-sign me 100%, but definitely take the good ideas that everybody provides. Kanye West said, he's got a lyric, "Who throw a tantrum like he is 3 years old? Don't you love it that somebody still speaks from their soul?" And that's, something to look for. Because when you get people speaking really carefully, it often means they're... Well, if they're not trying to lie to you, sometimes it means they're trying to lie to you. Sometimes it means they're trying to be really careful. And you'll get more credit for how you do, how you say something than what you say. And when the CBC came and interviewed, CBC The National was kind enough to ask us to hold a street action on Wednesday, September 30th, even though we normally do them on Saturdays at TorontoTruthSeekers.com. Should be out in the streets this Saturday as well. At Dundas Square. They asked to get together on Wednesday. They were kind enough to come film us for a couple hours and try and squeeze some of that onto their broadcast. Made a bunch of local stations. Didn't make the 4 hours of rebroadcast to National. So I guess the top editors came in and went, "Nah, these guys are making too much sense. We're trying to promote the H1N1 vaccine, not the people questioning it and revealing the risks of it, and not just selling the potential benefits." So, but when we did that, I knew I had to talk to them. And I'm not even going to be insulting to the media. People sometimes be like, why are you doing this? And I'm like, listen, if I'm the media, the mass media, and I come to see you and ask you questions and whatever, don't waste my time. Don't waste my time. I don't want to waste your time. Let's try and make this work. And that's my attitude with it. 9/11 is an inside job. 9/11 truth, pretty much off the table. Still on our truth umbrella, but not in our swag, not in our shirts, and so on. Because we're just not going to kibosh your story, folks. You came here to talk about the H1N1 vaccine and why certain people are opposed to it, and why they're getting together in groups, even in public, and sharing information that they think is valuable about it. You're doing that. It's a hot story right now, September 2009, in Toronto and across Canada. So we'll cover you. And I'm like, okay. That's fine. If that's what you want to talk about, we can talk about that. We're not going to lie. but we are going to make sure we give you some, you know, news that you can use and answers that you can use, and not just be talking all sorts of craziness that would take a lot longer to explain than, you know, we necessarily have in this format of, you know, a couple of hours of filming, some interviews with a few different members of Toronto Truth Seekers, some interviews with a few different members of the public, and then I spoke as the spokesperson using my given name for the group, because I speak it in English good sometimes when I want it. But I knew what to say, and I knew how to keep it conservative, and I knew how to keep it open, and knew how to keep it like we're not being preachy. On the show, I'm preachy, you know. I ain't think preachers are doing a good enough job, and then nobody's preaching, and our artists ain't preaching. And so I'm like, ah, screw it. I sound preachy. If I'm the only one, well, that might be a problem, and I better not stop. But it's not, we can all think for ourselves. And if I mess up or if I say something stupid, and occasionally I'll get a fact wrong. And yesterday I said $485 billion reported in the New York Times to build FEMA camps, illegal immigration detention centers. In actuality, it was a merger of $385 million and the rounded up $400 million number that I sometimes use. So it wasn't $485 million, it was $385 million on the Halliburton, Kellogg, Brown & Root FEMA concentration immigration camps that they got a contract from the U.S. government to build because of illegal immigration concerns, at least at first, or anyone who's stripped of their citizenship under new war on terror policies. So there it is. So on the Drake thing, the other reason that I bring it up is Twitter, is that you know, and I know that if I you know, if I'm interviewed because of my music, or if I'm interviewed for whatever reason by the media, and if I mention, you know, Twitter, you know, yeah, you can catch us at our Twitter page, you know, this, or yeah, I tweeted this to my friend, oh, I got an amazing tweet. If I say that crap, and that's a hot kind of meme or theme in the culture and in the media, then I know I got a good chance of getting that on TV and out there. And so I might even slip that in. And so when it comes to this, you know, Drake said he's going to go visit, you know, Lil Wayne in prison, and he's going to bring him messages from Lil Wayne's fans, and he's asking Lil Wayne fans to tweet him. So it's not like Wayne can't see this on a computer in jail or something, which I'm sure he may have periodic access to, but I guess, or it's not like he couldn't get a printout of these mailed to him. So Drake's not even saying, you know, write me letters, you know, handwrite something, you know, make a pretty little picture of Lil Wayne, you know, all jailed up and still singing like a free bird. No, what they're saying is they're saying, tweet this and I'll take it to Lil Wayne. So absolutely insane. But could go on and on and on about that. That's just one, and that's just the first article on the first page. But damn, I cannot stop staring at Jessica Biel in Mexico City. And it says A-lister. She's an A-lister. And this is the picture on the cover of the Metro. It says here, Jessica Biel, star of the movie The A-Team, poses for photographers yesterday during an event to promote the film in Mexico City. The A-Team is scheduled to open in Canada June 11th. Wow, okay. I got to put Miss Beal down a sec and deal with this A-Team business. The New World Order, the Anglo-American establishment, the powers that be evil, the social engineers behind creating and managing a culture, our culture, they haven't hit us as bad as some of us say, and they've hit us a lot worse than most of us say. So we've got genetically modified foods messing with us. We got vaccines messing with us. We got pollution messing with us, environmental threats. We got xenoestrogen being leaked from plastic bottles, which is a form of estrogen that causes girls to hit puberty at, you know, 8, 9 years old these days instead of 12, 13, and effeminizes guys to take them out of the game, makes them much more effeminate. Nothing against gay people, just there should not be chemical attacks on us to make us more feminine. And that's it. And even a gay guy, you know, you're going to want to be tough enough to man up for whatever you got to man up for. You know, if your dude's treating you badly, or if your government's treating you badly, whatever, you know, you're definitely going to want to have, you know, enough man in you to take care of that. So we've been hit, you know, a few different ways, but, you know, we're okay. And we're, you know, the fact is that the New World Order wants to manage us for certain things, and they haven't finished using us to build the final global panopticon technogrid prison planet that they're developing. So they need us smart enough to do that. They need us smart enough to communicate. They need us smart enough to problem solve. They need us healthy enough to, you know, complete tasks, to do heavy lifting when it comes to labor, or heavy lifting mentally and intellectually. So you know, that's, you know, we're okay. You know, that's what makes this a huge joke, is that there are teenagers who are handing out DVDs, burning hangout DVDs, who are putting up posters in their neighborhoods, who are handing out vaccine exemption forms like you can get at VRAN.org here in Canada, to their fellow students in class and saying, look, take this to your parents. Research this. Save yourselves. If your parents are too slack and lazy and obsessed with crap to help you out, then you know, you got to help yourself. And you know, there it is. So, you know, in a nutshell, you know, there are people worldwide that are taking action on these issues, and it's a no-brainer, the fact that we can do things in this culture, especially since we've already proven things in this culture. There's tons of videos of my colleagues at TorontoTrueSeekers.com and myself at different times and together doing things on these issues and handling these issues. And so, you know, it's important to keep that in mind, that in this culture you can communicate safely and effectively about these things. But what they are trying to do is they are trying to trap us in a version of the movie The Matrix. And if you remember the movie The Matrix from 1999, it was a whole bunch of people basically brain chipped in pods, fetuses growing into full humans in little pod worlds, their own little pod worlds as they, you know, defined them in their heads, all trapped in the late 20th century, because the designers of the computer program in the allegorical movie said that's when there was the most human activity to generate the most human thought and thinking, and that's when our brains were in pretty good shape to generate the most electrochemical energy from our communications, our interactions, our thoughts in the dream world in the Matrix. And then, of course, in the movie, you know, people unplugged from that, saw, you know, how horrible it was that humanity was totally enslaved like that, and there was a resistance movement building to bring people out of the Matrix who could handle it. Now, what's key to note about that is trapping people in the late 20th century. If you look at what's going on in Toronto right now with musicals like Rock of Ages, Fiddler on the Roof, The Sound of Music, Dirty Dancing, you know, all these things from the 80s coming back, retro music coming back, just staring at a beautiful picture of Ms. Jessica Biel selling the new movie The A-Team based on the old TV show, Knight Rider's back. Everything's coming back because they are basically trying to trap us in our childhood. Multiple reasons for doing this, but one of them is that it turns us into children. If you always think about the things you thought of when you were children, then you know, you have a memory of how you thought of those things, and that memory will, you know, cloud your judgment in the present. And they're trying to turn us all into children here so Big Brother can beat our butts. And that is something that you can see evidenced by this. So when you see all the retro stuff out there, when you see what's going on with respect to the infantilization of our culture, please do keep that in mind and pay attention. And resist it in any way you can by sharing some information. Is global warming to blame for cooling of the heart? Al Gore and Tipper Gore are separating after 40 years of marriage. Well, I'll tell you this much. Al Gore is evil and... Sorry, there's one. Oh, okay. Do I have to play something?
No.
All right. So I got a CKLN board member here, Barry Johnson, authoritatively over my left shoulder, like the good or bad angel. He's going to decide. And anyways, Al and Tipper Gore are getting divorced, but Al Gore is scum, so that's that. And global warming's a fraud. Just keep in mind, the war on terror raptures take our rights. Global warming raptures take our stuff. All the strains of thought that flow from those are suspect. Keep that in mind. Got a couple other things here for you, but that seems to do. I think that what I'll do is I will leave you with a track for Mr. Gaskin to take the mic back and blow your mind with 4 hours of jazz, extra funky and crispy and smooth like he likes it. Right now, what are we looking here for here, Barry? Should I play a song or you want to play something else? Yeah, okay. So Mr. Johnson has given me the authority to end off my show here. Let's see here. Oh, rats. All right, here's what I'll do. All right, I'm going to end off the show with You Will Let Go of My Mind Again, a track that Mr. Gaskin can fade out whatever he wants to, because I do think it's important, folks. Here on June 2nd, 2010, on a beautiful day, we can be totally relaxed by our environments, totally relaxed by where we live, and totally appreciative of where we live. Now, in that state of mind, it's entirely possible that bad ideas could be snuck into our happy-go-lucky heads. So keep an eye out for those. Warn other people about them. A great place to check include InfoWars.com, NaturalNews.com, TrendsResearch.com, CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com, LocallyTorontoTruthSeekers.com, PressForTruth.ca, ConspiracyCulture.com, and the Toronto Street News newspaper on the streets. Flip a homeless guy, Toonie, and get some info you can crack open over a Starbucks. I'm out of here, folks. Mr. Gaskin's up next. Have a fantastic day.
KLN 88.1 FM, licensed by the Canadian Radio Television and Telecommunications Commission to broadcast in stereo at 88.1 MHz on the FM band. CKLN is owned and operated by CKLN Radio Incorporated, which is located at Ryerson University within the Student Campus Center in Toronto, Canada.
At the time of license application, CKLN filed a comprehensive promise of performance with the Commission, and within that document made specific commitments to its operations and programming. The license issued by the CRTC requires CKLN to honor these commitments made in the promise of performance and to comply with the FM radio broadcasting regulations.
A copy of the license with the promise of performance and conditions of licensing is available for inspection by any member of the public at the offices of the Commission and at the offices of CKLN during business hours. Radio frequencies are public property in Canada. CKLN invites your comments and inquiries.
Our mailing address is 55 Gould Street, Toronto, Ontario, postal code M5B1E9, phone number 416-979-5251.
Thank you for tuning in to CKLN 88.1 FM, and good morning.